Judge Hogan, we're going to switch gears here really quick because I saw something that inspired a question.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask before we go on because it applies to your background, mm-hmm. where you grew up, and your religion and everything. What do you think of having this in the courtroom, In God We Trust? As a former lawyer and judge, and I'm sure somebody who pays attention to...
Well, it seems to me that, I don't know. I'd have to think about it more. You see it both ways. I mean, isn't the motto of the government and in the Supreme Court, they have it, I think. And I guess, though, if it was really challenged, would I have a problem with it? Perhaps.
As a judge?
Yeah. I have no, as a person, I have no problem with it. But as a judge, as somebody, I would have to think about it. I guess I'd have to sit down and look at the law, and I never had a case like that, but it's a concern certainly. I'm a firm believer in the separation of church and state, and more so than ever. And is it possible that I would think that shouldn't be there? Yeah, it's possible. I'd have to think about it.
All right, well, let's move ahead then, and let me ask you if your political allegiances had any effect on your judgeship or any of your decisions or anything like that.
Political allegiances, no. Political philosophy, no. What you do is, in my opinion, you read the cases and you follow the law. Now, as far as the way you deal with people and stuff, I suppose, maybe so. Would I rule, that's an example of somebody, I really felt bad for somebody and I felt terrible and I thought, I would love to get them to judge, but if the law said no, the case law said no, you can't, would I rule, follow the law? The answer is I would. I guess... the answer is I'd follow the law, so I guess not. But I think in fire, you go on eviction court, example, or pro se court, do I have empathy for people who, really have no representation, and many times have no one looking out for their rights? The answer is yes. And would I make sure that their rights are protected? The answer is yes, I would. And would I, and it's true, would I treat a case, a $500 case or a $1,000 case, just the same as a $10 million case? I would. Because to those people, it's just absolutely as important as anybody else. But, you have cases where, people are paralyzed or are, just terrible things, and you feel terrible for them. But have I dismissed those cases? I have.
You mentioned... sort of a difference between political allegiance and political philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
How do you separate the two?
Do I have ideas about, right and wrong? And I think that has something to do with political philosophy. Political allegiance would be, it would seem to me, if, you knew someone who... political allegiance would be, because this case has something to do, being a Democrat, we'll say, which I am, would have some effect on the Democratic Party, therefore I would vote that way, or I would rule that way because, it would help whatever party it is or whatever person it is who happen to know. And would I do that? I would not. Would political philosophy, I think everything in your life somehow affects your decision-making process, and so basically, I'm Catholic, or believe in God. Would that have some effect? How could you say not? I'm much more liberal than conservative for sure. Would that have philosophy? How it affects it, I have no idea. But it's just in your decision-making, your everyday life experiences has to affect that. But as far as can I? Again, look at the law and rule how I think the case law is. I can, and I have, and I did.
Did you come along as a judge before or after the court system was restructured?
Well, I'm not quite sure when the court system was restructured. I'm not quite sure what you mean. I would assume it's after. I don't know there was any major restructuring after I got on. There were always changes. I mean, there's always different, you know, way they do things differently. But any major there was none when I was there, I would say. And it was all, you know, the way they divide it up and the way they, is the same.
Okay, so therefore, aside from the chief judge, is there anyone you had to report to or take orders from as far as, or was there...
I mean, you never really, well, the way they did it was there's a chief judge and then there's various divisions, i.e. First Municipal, Law Division, Chancery Division, which Judge Henry's in, Divorce Division, Probate Division, etc. So, and each one of these divisions had a someone in charge of that division. So your immediate supervisor would be the person in that division. And even in the larger divisions, like First Municipal, they'd have somebody in charge of evictions and somebody, you know, so you might even have somebody, or traffic court, there'd be someone in charge of traffic court, even though it's under the First Municipal. So you could go a number of tiers. When I was doing it, basically, in First Municipal, when I reported to most was Judge O'Connell, who was head of the First Municipal. And Judge Comerford was the chief judge, but generally my immediate supervisor was Judge O'Connell. And then when I went to Law Division, it was also Judge O'Connell. And then he went to, he became chief judge. So then, from then it was Judge Cohn, who I reported to. And then when Judge Cohn went to the appellate court, it was Judge Mannix. No, it was Judge Evans. And then Judge Evans became chief judge when Judge O'Connell left, and then it was Judge Mannix who was still there. And those are the people I generally reported to. And, you know, when you say take orders, the orders would be, you know, here's your assignment. There was never any orders as far as how you should rule. But as far as assignments and, you know, you're in this courtroom or that courtroom,
what was your relationship, how would you typify your relationship with your superior judge?
I got along with them all well. I probably, as far as socially, the closest with Judge Mannix. There's no doubt about that. Judge O'Connell was a judge when my wife got sick. He was the head of Law Division when she got sick, and he was wonderful, and so I'll always be grateful for that. And he's a great judge, great administrator too. But so in that respect too, I respect him as a judge, but also he had a hard time. He was great to me.
And what about your relationship with other judges?
I have good relations. Extremely friendly. I got along with all the judges. I can't think of any judge I really didn't get along with. And we, actually, Judge Nowicki and I kind of started like softball games where we played various divisions and stuff. And I still socialize with six or eight judges. We have Bulls tickets together and we go out. And I'd say Judge Ward is one of my best friends. And so I probably have, you know, 10 or 12 very good friends who are judges. And then, you know, socially, I would go up with any of them. So the relationships are good. It was hard. When you get appointed, it's not like you're kind of on your own. You know, they appoint one guy, and then here's your assignment. What was nice about associate judges, you'd have a class, and they'd appoint for associates. The way associates get appointed is the chief judge ultimately does the appointment. What happens is the chief judge, if there's 10 vacancies, will nominate 20 people, and then all the full circuit judges vote on the a 10 out of the 20. But what happens, what's kind of nice, is then you have a group of 10 or 20 people who start off together, and they usually always went over to traffic court, and they became very good friends. So that was easier in that relationship. I didn't have, you know, you don't have that, so you just get to know everybody gradually, and you do.
Are there any significant cases or memorable ones that you'd want to talk about during your time as a judge?
Let's see. What are some cases? I mean, they're all kind of... I mean, the one was an interesting case was I had a case where a little girl was killed by a guy, and his parents then bail him out of jail, and then he ends up killing his brother and attacking his sister, and the case revolved around whether the parents of the girl who was killed could sue the parents of the kid who did it, and the theory being negligent supervision and negligent entrustment, because what happened was the theory would be that they knew all these problems were going on, and he had a long history of problems. They didn't take care of it, and right before they he was 17 or 18 or something, right before he on his birthday, they gave him this long hunting knife, and that was the knife he used for, you know, killing the girl. So the question was, could they hold him responsible? And a lot of it was kind of interesting. The issues before me, a lot of discovery stuff, where the question was, what you would have to show is, well, these parents knew of all these problems, you know, what the doctors told them, what the psychiatrist told them, et cetera, you know, and then they did these things and they didn't follow through, or they knew it, and why would you do this if you know this stuff? And so what the defendants claimed was privilege, saying you can't disclose what this child's psychological records and stuff like that. So I had a rule on that. In fact, I said you could, and the court said I couldn't. But eventually, I think those cases settled. But it was hard because, you know, I remember they took the deposition of the sister, who had been, and was, you know, I came
sister,
of the guy who did it, who he attacked, and so I sat in on, because she was so emotionally upset by the whole thing, and I sat in on the deposition with him, but it was a hard case, but it did settle. I know that. And then let's see what other ones I had. I had Brown's chicken case. See, I should have turned it off.
It's okay.
Sorry, I meant to.